Hello and welcome to the Immigrants for Mama podcast. I'm your host, Abby Halberstadt, happy wife, mama to 10, Bible-believing Christian. And on today's show, I want to tackle a topic that has been bubbling to the surface on social media. I keep seeing reels and posts about it. It's something that I talk about in my face-to-face, quote-unquote, in real life community. And I think it's something that's going to be really relevant to any woman out there, any listener, especially any mama out there. It's so relevant to me today, and I'll explain exactly why this is a topic that was at the top of my mind today, even right before I started this podcast in just a second. But before we get started, I want to talk about our podcast sponsor, Voteberg Music Academy, not your average music lessons. You can get 20% off each month that you're enrolled in online lessons with Voteberg Music Academy with the code M is for Mama. And you can even share lessons between siblings so that your cost per month is often less than $30. That price sure beats private lessons, which are often quite expensive. And it also gives you access to live teachers, 24-hour access to your online lessons, a warm and thriving community, and even lessons from a video vault where you can have extra lessons provided for you if you want to move ahead quickly. They provide lessons in mandolin, guitar, violin, piano, and ukulele. So you have your pick of quite a few different instruments. And it is just such a fun and engaging way. As a parent, you don't want to be nagging your child about practicing, and you won't have to worry about that with Voteberg Music Academy and the way they make your students want to learn their music well. You can use the code again, M is for Mama, for 20% off at voteburgmusicacademy.com. I'll put all that info in the show notes for you today. All right, guys. So what is this topic that I keep hearing about? I'll say it in one word, and then we'll dive into it. The topic is overstimulation. So this is something that I see talked about almost constantly, that moms are overstimulated, that a lot of our overwhelm and our frustration and our anger and our exhaustion comes from just having too many things on our plates, from being touched out, from being asked too many questions, from having too much required of us. And I ran across a reel the other day on Instagram, so a video, where the mom was saying, kind of in a joking way, that when she asks her kids and her husband to give her a break for just a minute so she doesn't completely lose her mind. I don't think those are quite the words she used, but I'll edit out the words that were actually used, so that she doesn't lose her stuff. And then along comes her husband, and it shows a little video of this man kind of clicking his heels and coming along very cheerfully in the midst of her angst and overwhelm to ask where she keeps the paper towels, you know. And of course her face portrays how annoyed and infuriated she is at this concept that she's just asked for a break and she can't catch a break, you know, from her husband or her kids. Now, it was played for likes mostly, I think. It was played for relatability for sure. Relatability is kind of the gold standard for motherhood in social media, or actually in a lot of different areas. If you can get people to say, I feel so seen, it me, you know, if you've ever heard people leave that comment, it me, that's me. Or I've never, you know, felt this so hard deep down in my soul before, or things like that. You know that you've struck that nerve of virality. People are going to share your post. You know that you've struck that nerve of commonality and relatability. And so the question always is, what should our goal, at least the question on this podcast is always, what should our goal as Christian parents be? What should our goal as mamas be? Should it be to find someone else who will high five us in how overwhelmed we feel and how overstimulated we are and how kind of piled on everything is? Or should it be to find practical solutions? And is there a happy medium in between those two? In other words, is it ever appropriate to relate to someone so hardcore that you feel relieved that you're not the only one, that you feel encouraged potentially, that this is common and therefore can be overcome? Of course, you could flip the other direction and end up feeling relieved that you're not the only one and therefore use that as an excuse to not overcome, to not try. Those are definitely two sides of the same coin. But I thought that the comment section was interesting on this reel, because while there were quite a few people giving fist bumps of solidarity and saying, you know, I've never felt anything so hardcore in my life, totally relate, my husband is exactly like this, my kids are exactly like this, There were also a lot of really snarky comments that went along the lines of, overstimulation is a made up thing. You're not overstimulated. You're just lazy. You're not overstimulated. You're just selfish. You're not overstimulated. You're just weak. You know, they weren't kind comments. It wasn't even someone coming in with constructive criticism, which, by the way, constructive criticism in a comment, while not entirely inappropriate, rarely lands the way that the commenter wants it to land. We've talked about this before, but if you don't have a personal relationship with the person to whom you're commenting, your comment is probably not going to hold the water that you hope that it will. You're going to be paddling a pretty leaky boat just by nature of being a complete and total stranger. Now, comments from someone that has been following me for a long time, has invested, maybe we've chatted in DMs. I know that their heart is to encourage or to correct in love. That would be a different thing, even though it's coming through an internet setting. But so these comments that are coming in, and they're being so rude to this lady and calling her names and saying that she's making things up, I think that they reflect two things. One, the freedom that we feel to be rude when we're behind a screen, or that some of us do anyway. And two, the fact that maybe this overstimulation narrative has been a bit overplayed and that people are losing patience for it. I do think that we have a bit of an epidemic of self-diagnosis that's happening on social media, whether it's TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, X, whatever it's called now, Facebook, whatever platform that you're on, where we have a large number of people who are diagnosing themselves as neurodivergent. And they might not even be able to tell you if there's an actual definition for that or what that means. It just sounds cool. They don't want to be a normie, you know, they don't want to be someone who is kind of in the normal lane, whatever that means. They're self-diagnosing as ADHD, they're self-diagnosing as OCD, and it's just very popular to kind of slap a label on yourself as an explanation, if not an excuse, for certain tendencies. Now, I am somewhere in the middle of all of this debate. So if you're expecting me to say with those commenters, you know what, you're not overstimulated, you're just fill in the blank, and I just know who you are. I mean, that would be incredibly presumptuous of me, for one. But two, I told you that this would be a very relevant topic for me personally, because I literally fought with overstimulation, assuming that we're going to give this term validity, meaning feeling like all of my senses were maxed out, feeling like I had too much sensory input for my brain to handle without feeling kind of stressed and jittery, right before starting this podcast, because if you watch this particular podcast, you'll see that the setup is a little bit different, because I couldn't find the rest of the cord for my usual camera that I use. Now, it should be plugged into the wall. And my little boys know that they're not supposed to come in the girl cave where I record and mess with things, but it doesn't mean that it always goes that way. And so my cord is missing. So that was one source of frustration, which, if you've ever needed to do something on a deadline, because I need to go pick up my kids soon from their homeschool co-op, and so I needed to get this done. If you ever needed to do something on a deadline and you find yourself missing the components of whatever it is that you need to be able to accomplish that on a deadline or not, I mean, accomplish it at all, you know that feeling of frustration that starts simmering in your chest, where it's like, man, this is more complicated than it's supposed to be. Why does it have to be this way? Why couldn't it have just been straightforward? Why couldn't the things that I needed be where they're supposed to be? You know, I mean, if you've never felt that before, then great. You must be really good at keeping up with all the things, or maybe you don't have any children, but most of us can relate to this, I'm guessing. So as I'm looking for the rest of this cord, I realize that I have a basket in which the cords usually are placed. And instead there's kind of this pile of jumbled up cords. And I'm like, okay, someone has been in here going through all of this stuff. So I have something which I have never found a name for, which is totally fine, because I'm kind of the opposite of the trend of wanting to give everybody a label or give myself a label. I would prefer not to label something that's possibly just a tendency or a personality trait or even a season that you're in, because we can tend to label things and give them a lot of power over us. And to think that we are stuck in those things and that there's no hope of getting out of them if we kind of name them and then leave them. And if you've watched my podcast or listened to my podcast of the episode that I did with my friend Anne Swindell, you know that both of us struggle with something called trichotillomania, which is a diagnosable condition. And yet we talked about how we don't want to find our identity in something that we've struggled with for most of our lives. We want to find our identity in Christ, and we want to find our identity in the fact that just like Paul, we may have thorns in our fleshes. We may have things that we struggle with even for our entire existence on this earthly planet. But that doesn't mean that's who we are, and that's the be-all, end-all of what defines us. So I say all of that because I have always had a really strong aversion to things getting hung or stuck. Now, let me tell you this. I know I'm not alone in this because I don't know anybody that likes to walk by the handle sticking out of the kitchen cabinet and get your belt loop stuck on it and get yanked back by that belt loop. I don't know anybody that just loves untangling cords and having them get stuck over and over again. I remember one time that I saw an article that was attempting to explain the science behind why headphone cables get so tangled up. And I remember reading about two-thirds of it and thinking, oh man, so there's actual physics behind why this maddening process happens over and over again, that no matter how well you roll it up, probably when you take it out of your purse, or even if you put it in a little pouch, it's going to be tangled. And I can't break it down for you. I don't remember the details of it, but I remember thinking, man, it's like, I don't even believe in, quote, the universe, but it's like the universe is conspiring against us sometimes to drive us nuts, you know? So I have noticed though, that whether it's tangled up shoelaces when I was younger, or whether it's getting hung on something that's sticking out, or untangling cords, or just kind of opening a box or a container and it's not opening easily, that I'll find myself having to fight frustration more than I feel like I should. Now, this is how I've been my entire life. So I definitely have been able to learn coping mechanisms, and it's not a big deal. But when I see people being so quick to diagnose themselves with overstimulation, I think, okay, well, if I don't have any other words for it, I think that's sometimes what it is, that there is this physical response that I have that then changes to a mental response of, I want this thing to open. I don't want it to get stuck. Can it please just kind of do the thing it's supposed to do. I was chatting with my assistant the other day, who is very level-headed, such a hardworking, productive young mama of four. And I admire her so much. And she was talking about being in the kitchen with all the babies at her feet. She has kids that are 7 and under, I believe. And having kids everywhere, asking her questions, trying to make dinner, and feeling like, you know, her brain was being scrambled. And we were talking about this concept of overstimulation and how it's a very real thing. It's not like those comments were saying, where you're just weak, you're just selfish, all you want is free time. No, sometimes you want to do what's right for your family, and you feel like all of these factors are working against you to make it hard to do right, okay? And what I mean by that is this. 1 Peter 5:8 says, be sober-minded and be watchful. Some other examples of translations say, be self-controlled, be sober and keep watch, be vigilant, or have sound judgment. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. That may sound kind of dramatic when we're talking about overstimulation, but let me tell you that if it feels like everything is going wrong, all the dominoes are falling in the wrong direction, and you are quickly losing your cool as each new thing kind of tips you toward having an excuse to rage and be unkind and lose your temper and be short with your kids or your husband or whatever. Or you feel like, and I've said this in MS for Mama, if you feel like their things that they're doing are personal, that instead of simply things that are annoying or inconvenient, and you can work through those, you can choose to view them as opportunities to exercise self-control and show maturity. Instead, you start taking them personally and feeling like, you know, they heard my request and they just ignored it and they are out to get me. that could be your enemy, the devil, prowling around when you're not being sober-minded or vigilant. I'm not being sober-minded or vigilant, and seeking to devour us by getting us so muddled and so wrapped up in our frustrations, our overwhelm, that we can't choose joy, that we can't choose maybe just something as practical as walking outside and taking deep breaths. And I say this again, because it is really relevant to me. The last 3 weeks since we have moved back into our house, Sean has traveled twice, possibly three times. I'm trying to think. I've lost track, guys. I've lost track. And it has been a lot of organizing and opening boxes and figuring out where things go, trying to keep up with all of the regular life stuff, get dinner on the table, white bottoms, do all the things. Listen, people move all the time, every day. This is nothing unique that should be an extra stress that would drive me over the edge. And yet there are some other factors in my life involved that have made these particularly stressful weeks, in addition to the travel and the moving. And I have found myself much more emotional than usual, much shorter fuse than usual, fighting that narrative that my family is, quote, out to get me, or doesn't care about my feelings, or doesn't care about my systems, biting back harsh words, sometimes using harsh words instead of biting them back and then having to apologize for them. And so I am talking about this topic from a place of being very aware of how it materially affects my life. And I would say that based on the DMs that I get, based on the emails that I get, it's affecting your lives as well. I can remember a conversation I had with a friend. We no longer have contact with each other. That friendship dissolved. And part of the reason was because it was always kind of an unhealthy tension of competition and judgment, and on both sides. We both struggled, I think, a lot. And the Lord taught me a lot of lessons through the dissolution of that friendship. But I can remember particularly at dinner one evening that she was talking about how much she was struggling with the noise levels in her house and the fact that she just was having to hang on to Jesus to make it through an evening of how loud her kids were, how many requests she was getting. And she was talking about how it was really kind of ramping up and that it had become worse over the years, that it bothered her more, and that the aural overstimulation was kind of at its peak and she was really struggling with it. And I remember thinking, man, I can relate. My kids can be really loud. I think I probably had six kids at the time, maybe seven. So, and they were all small. So plenty of noise going on in my house, as there is still currently plenty of noise going on in my house, probably right now, in another room. And I remember her telling me that I was lucky or blessed. I don't remember the exact wording, because I don't remember the wording, guys, but it was something to the effect of, I was lucky I didn't have to deal with this, or that I responded differently. And I remember thinking initially, that's kind of a nice thing to say. She seems to be saying that I have patience or that I handle it well. But there was something about the undertone that made me think about it on the way home. Because I don't remember how I responded at the time, but I think it was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, I can relate. You know, I know when things get loud, I get frustrated. But there was this implication that I just wasn't bothered by it. It didn't affect me. And as I was driving home, I realized that it hadn't been a compliment. It had been a comment on the fact that she was struggling more than I was with this particular thing, that she was more sensitive, that it was a burden for her that I did not carry. And I remember thinking at the time that to some extent that was true, that while I had this thing where if I get my belt loop stuck, I feel overstimulated very quickly, that then on the flip side, when it came to loud noises or lots of kids talking at once or a piano going in the background, that I could handle it fairly well. So that's one point that I would love to make. And I don't credit myself in any way with that being something that I am so good at, because I have some sort of superpower that's inherent with me that makes me better than someone else. Clearly, I struggle with the physical things getting stuck, but maybe not the oral things as much. But that's a point that I would like to make, that we need to have grace. Unlike those commenters that were being so unkind to that woman who was acknowledging her overwhelm. Now, maybe the point of her acknowledging the overwhelm was for likes. Maybe it was for sympathy. Maybe it was for relatability. Maybe she was kind of throwing her husband under the bus in the process of making the reel. And I'm not into any of those things. However, to come in and immediately judge someone's heart and motivation and say, like, you know, you're just pathetic if you feel this way. I think we need to be careful, one, not to assume for sure that someone else doesn't struggle if they seem like they have more self-control or aren't as bothered in a particular area. Because I will say that ironically, in the process of that friendship breaking up, I had my first real experience with anxiety and with overwhelm in that area. And noises started bothering me more. We were moving into our house for the first time that time. And we were surrounded by a sea of red dirt. It was dirty all the time. Nobody was in the room when they were sleeping. I had eyes on me, you know, at 11 p.m. at night. I felt overstimulated all the time. And one of the things was the noises, because our floors were concrete and the ceilings were high and we didn't have much furniture in the house yet. So it was super echoey. And I remember thinking it was ironic that this person had said, you know, I'm sensitive and I have to deal with this. Be glad you don't. And thinking at the time, yeah, I guess that's not something that I struggle with a ton. And then it becoming something that I really had to work through. Now, thankfully, there are seasons of overwhelm. And that's the second thing that I would say. First, that we don't make assumptions about where people are and that we give grace for the areas in which they are struggling while not giving agency for an excuse to sin, because we don't go on sinning so that grace will increase, but we are so grateful that there is grace. And then two, that we recognize that some of those things that we're struggling with, some of those overwhelms, some of that overstimulation, while very real at the time, may not be the same battle that we fight in 5 years, in 6 months, in 3 weeks. I don't expect to be experiencing the same level of kind of short fuse and feeling exhausted and feeling piled on in a month when we're completely settled in our home and Sean isn't traveling as much and there are other factors that have evened themselves out as well as I do right now. And I think there's a lot of grace and hope in that. Instead of finding our identity in being overstimulated, instead of saying all moms have too much asked of them, therefore we cannot possibly thrive, love our families well, be expected to kind of perform those mom duties in an excellent way on a consistent basis with calmness and clarity and commitment. Like those things can't be required of us because we're overstimulated. So we can all just kind of high five each other and sit in a huddle of misery, or we can recognize it's real. It is a genuine struggle. Satan really is out to get us focused on our struggles and to bring us down in the middle of them and make us feel like we'll never get out. There are seasons of it. And also there are practical, this is the third point that I want to make. There are practical steps that we can take even in our overwhelm to move through it and past it, or at the very least to be able to function in it. Again, that assistant that I was talking to that I admire so much. Hi, Becca. I know you listen. She was talking about headaches that she's been suffering from. And the other night she was telling me that she hadn't gotten to a particular thing that I asked her to do, which I threw at her last minute. So there was no reason for her to have gotten to it because she had been in the midst of baking all these things and food prep and freezer meals. And then she was talking about how she was having to go to bed early because she had a headache. And I said, good grief. That is so inspirational that in the midst of having a headache, you chose to push through and get all of these things done. And she said, you know, I was on the couch and I was trying to get my kids to calm down and be quiet because my head hurt so badly. And I felt miserable on the couch. And I was getting so frustrated, and my kids weren't listening well in this particular instance, because when mom's on the couch, that's not when kids listen super well. Even if you are consistent with giving instructions and follow through and leading your kids well, when mom's on the couch, it's just, they just know, you know? And so she said, you know, I just got angry at that headache, and I got frustrated with the fact that I still felt horrible lying on the couch. So I figured I would feel horrible and get something done. And I think that there is something to that. That there are times when we shouldn't push through, when we should rest, when the true rest is there and we should be grateful for it and receive it. And there are other times when we realize we're trying to grab at that rest and we're overstimulated and our heads hurt. And we are going to push through, not because our heads are necessarily going to feel better at the end, not necessarily because we are going to feel less jittery about the noises or the being touched or the getting hung on the belt loop, but because we will have chosen to do the hard thing in the midst of the overwhelm because there wasn't another choice. And we will have found God's grace to be sufficient for that as well. And so I use her as an example because while it wasn't like, and I'm so glad I did because the headache went away and I felt so cheerful, she was able to say, I do have these things in the freezer at the end of it all. I did go to bed early with my headache. My husband took over with bedtime. You know, things worked out. It doesn't have to look like a fairy tale ending to your hard day or your day of overwhelm or your overstimulation to say things worked out. I can rejoice that the Lord got me through it, even if I didn't enjoy the entire process. So the question is overstimulation a real thing? I think so. Yes, I do think there are times that whether it's our blood sugar dropping out, whether it's lack of sleep, whether it is truly just so many things going on at once that you haven't even necessarily chosen, it's just the nature of the moment that you're being bombarded from five or six different directions with requests. And our brains are only made to be able to process a certain amount of things really well. Whatever the situation is, or maybe it's a season of moving or travel or sickness or chronic relational issues, all of these wear on us. And we would be unwise to pretend like we're, quote, fine when we're not fine. And our lack of fineness gives us an opportunity to come to the foot of the cross and say, Jesus, I'm not doing well with this. I am struggling. I feel overwhelmed. I can't do this in my own strength. I'm not enough. And to just hold our palms open and receive the blessing of whether it's rest or the ability to push through or a moment of peace, because in talking about those practical things that we can do, a couple of other suggestions I have for you would be a power nap. If you have it in your ability at all, I'm talking like 10 to 15 minutes. I know a lot of people are going to be like, no, I'm going to feel groggy. And there are definitely people that feel groggier after 10 to 15 minutes than they would if they had stayed awake. But I know a lot of other people would really benefit from a 10 to 15 minute nap. There's actual studies that show that that is the optimal time for your brain to get recharged and to run at it again. Going out on the front porch and sitting for just a minute, even if it's literally 60 seconds to reset, choosing something that brings you joy instead of staying stuck in the thing that is bringing you so much angst and even anger. So choosing to turn on music and have a dance party, choosing to make cookies, even though you didn't finish sweeping. I'm telling you, we have the ability to turn things around in Christ's strength. We don't have to stay stuck and overwhelmed, even if the season is still lasting. Putting a big old smile on your face. There is scientific evidence that the posture and the expression of your face actually can produce dopamines, which can change your mood, and it can free up space in your brain to think more clearly, in which case you don't feel as overwhelmed. And ta-da, God has made us with this incredible ability to turn that frown upside down, to have a physical thing that we choose to do affect our mental state and our heart posture. And prayer. Prayer is such a huge thing. I was scrubbing poop off of walls last week. I have some 3-year-old twins who think it's super fun to be poop cossos. And I was so irritated at this. It's just not fun. It just felt like too much in the midst of everything else that I had going on. And you can send me all the emails with all the suggestions of what I should have done or how to work that out or have them help or, you know, what discipline I could do to make it not happen again. And that's fine. But in that moment, I was like, Lord, this feels personal. This feels silly. This feels pointless. I was in the middle of an important task and here I am scrubbing poop instead. And I forced myself to sing that song that I told you guys about a few episodes back where I say, I love you, Lord, and I lift my voice to worship you. Oh, my soul rejoice. My soul was not rejoicing, not naturally. But take joy, my King, in what you hear. May it be a sweet, sweet sound in your ear. Even singing that song through clenched teeth was more pleasing in God's ear than saying, why did you allow this? Why are we doing this? What possible purpose could this serve? The Lord can handle our questions, certainly. But when the question isn't producing an answer other than it is, it happened, it's here, you still have to deal with it, keep moving forward. That moment of praise and that moment of prayer of asking the Lord to replace your angst with His joy that doesn't make any sense in your circumstances is so wise and it's so powerful. So I really encourage you that while this topic, I think, is very relevant for moms, people in general, while I'm not brushing it aside, while I'm not saying it's a made-up diagnosis, while I'm not saying I've never experienced it, clearly I have, like I said, in the very seconds leading up to pressing play or record on this episode, I was experiencing it. I also think it doesn't have to be our master. I also think that we are able to be more than overcomers in this too. And that Jesus is big enough for our overwhelm and our overstimulation, and that is very good news indeed. If you enjoy the MS for Mama podcast, I would be so honored if you would subscribe and follow along, maybe share with friends or even leave a review. And if you want more content on motherhood and biblical responses to cultural issues, be sure to follow along on Instagram at m.is.4.mama.